Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review for Thursday, April 19th, 2018. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined Millikan University's Albert Taylor Theater, We're No Daredevils. Black Panther stunt performers share stories at Millikan by Valerie Wells, Herald and Review, Decatur. Professional stunt performers agree. The most dangerous stunt is the one in which the performer is set on fire. The thing about stunts is staying safe, said Courtney T. Manns, one of two Black Panther stunt performers who visited Millikan University on Wednesday. We're no daredevils. You have to do stunts over and over and over again. You can get hurt or hurt somebody if you're not safe. The night before a fire stunt, Manns said, he never gets much sleep. A lot could go wrong. Janicia Adams-Ginyard agreed. She's trained, and the equipment they use for stunts makes it as safe as possible, but being set on fire is still dangerous. Black Panther is based on the Marvel comic superhero of the same name and has been a smash at the box office since its release January 29. According to the movie website IBMD, the film has grossed more than $1.3 billion worldwide, so far, $674 million of that in the United States alone. Manns is the uncle of Kayria Rogers, who works for the Macon County State's Attorney's Office, and she arranged for him and Adams-Ginyard to visit Millikan. The two stunt performers participated in a question-and-answer session with a packed house in the morning and gave two demonstrations and presentations in the afternoon and evening. Adams-Ginyard said she's always been athletic, and living out one of her dreams hasn't stopped her from living out the others, too. She's been a radio personality, a professional wrestler whose character was called Frost, a member of the Olympic bobsled team as brakeman, an athletic model, and has been doing stunts since 2012. Everything you do, put your all into it, she said. A native of Cerritos, California, she knew that performing stunts would require some specialized skills and set out to acquire them by learning gymnastics and martial arts. She took jobs as an extra and background in films to learn set etiquette and meet people and let it be known she was willing to do stunts. Her first stunt job came from someone she'd work with in a commercial. She believed in her ability to do stunts, even though at the time she had never done any. But she had prepared and was ready. If she hadn't been, she wouldn't be successful, she said. Manns, who grew up in Los Angeles, shared video of some of his stunts from movies and television, pausing the shots to explain what was going on and what techniques were used. Anytime somebody falls down in a movie or TV commercial, it's a stunt person, Manns said. His 20-year career has included work in Empire, Everybody Loves Chris, Sons of Anarchy, Chicago PD, NCIS New Orleans, The Maze Runner, and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. He has doubled for Eddie Murphy, Kevin Hart, Morgan Freeman, and David Ayelowo, and his favorite work is in period pieces, though he has enjoyed his work on superhero movies, which includes Batman vs. Superman, in addition to Black Panther. I went from DC to Marvel, working both sides of the team, he joked. He has to be able and willing to change his appearance to look as much like the actor he's doubling for as possible, he said, which includes gaining or losing weight and cutting his hair. Adams-Ginyard dealt with that one, too, for Black Panther. The director, Ryan Coogler, wanted the Dora Milaje, the King of Wakanda's personal guard, to have shaved heads. She said she cried, and she called her best friend and her pastor, and her friend asked her if she were really going to give up such an opportunity over a little bit of hair. The job on Black Panther led directly to a job on Avengers: Infinity War, coming out later this month, and to one in Godzilla: King of Monsters, which is coming in 2019 for Adams-Ginyard. If I hadn't shaved my head, I wouldn't have gotten those, Adams-Ginyard said. I sacrificed a little bit of hair and gained so much. Bergner's in Forsyth to close. Others in area among Bon-Ton stores facing liquidation. By Maria Nagel, Herald and Review News Service, and Scott Perry, Herald and Review. Forsyth. A going out of business sale is imminent at the Bergner's in Hickory Point Mall, one of 260 stores that bankrupt parent company, the Bon-Ton Stores, is expected to sell in assets to liquidators to pay off creditors. 42 of the affected stores are in Illinois, including the Bergner's at Eastland Mall in Bloomington, White Oaks Mall in Springfield, and Marketplace Shopping Center in Champaign, and the Carson Store in Cross County Mall in Mattoon. It's going to be painful for the people who work there. It's going to be painful for the malls trying to fill the space, because there's a lot of malls out there and a lot of empty space, said Gary Hunter, an Illinois State University professor who teaches retail management and promotion and consumer behaviors. Hunter does not see the dissolution of Bon-Ton as another sign of the demise of brick-and-mortar retailing anytime soon, noting that about 90% of merchants remain in store buildings. In addition to Bergner's and Carson's, Bon-Ton operates department stores under the brand names of Elder Beerman, Herberger's, Boston Store, Yonkers, and Bon-Ton. Two liquidation firms are the victors of an auction for the bankrupt company's assets after the retailer failed to find a bidder willing to continue operating the store chain. Bergner's has been a key tenant at Hickory Point Mall since the mall opened in 1978. In recent years, the mall has seen major anchors such as JCPenney and Sears leave. In their place have come stores such as Hobby Lobby and TJ Maxx, which left Decatur locations for the mall, and Ross Dress for Less. Rather than looking at what Forsyth is losing with the planned closure, Mayor Marilyn Johnson would prefer to look at what the future may hold. It would be the perfect spot for a grocery store, Johnson said of the mall. A grocery store has long been atop the wish list of Forsyth residents, Johnson said, citing repeated community surveys. Looking at the selection of food items at the Forsyth Menards Home Improvement Center is a good indication of a need to be filled, Johnson said. She thinks a good fit would be the Fresh Market, a specialty grocery chain with more than 170 locations. Recent economic development efforts have been successful at filling some of those other wants, including a pharmacy and dry cleaners. The community has welcomed a host of other businesses in the past year, she said, and expects Andrew Zupkoff, the Community and Economic Development Coordinator, to bring even more. I think very positive, she said. This is just a change in the mall. She described the general feeling among people she has spoken with as one of sadness to see the business go. Some understand that the change has little to do with Forsyth and is more national in scope. Again, keeping that positive feeling, she prefers to look at the stores the mall has welcomed recently, namely Hobby Lobby and TJ Maxx. Bon-Ton said it expects to provide more details about going out of business sales following approval of the winning bid by the bankruptcy court. Those details were not available late Wednesday afternoon, but the company said in a statement that it will move forward in a constructive manner to ensure an orderly wind down of operations that minimizes the impact of this development on our associates, customers, vendors, and the communities we serve. Bon-Ton did not respond to requests to provide the number of workers it employs at the Forsyth store. CBL Properties, which owns the Forsyth Mall, reiterated Wednesday it was preparing for the store's closures. A spokeswoman said the company did not anticipate the announcement having a negative effect on future plans. Illinois Retail Merchants Association CEO and President Rob Carr said a realignment in the retail sector has affected the fate of Bon-Ton stores, which are often located in malls. We're seeing significant changes and traffic in malls, Carr said. I think those combinations lead to where we are today. Some malls are going to go away, while others repurpose, Carr added. I don't think you're going to see those big anchor store spaces filled with one big operator, as in the past. You might see them subdivided, said Carr. I think mall owners are going to look at more non-traditional ways of filling those spaces. For example, you could see grocery stores or multiple medical offices or facilities filling those spaces. In an effort to even the playing field between online and brick-and-mortar retailers, South Dakota is taking the lead. In arguments this week before the U.S. Supreme Court, the state's Attorney General, Marty Jackley, said that justices should allow states to collect sales taxes from most online retailers. The court is expected to make a decision by late June. While leveling the sales tax playing field with online merchants is important and vital, it is not going to be the only thing that needs to be done to help support the local business community, Carr said. Local and state governments need to start coordinating and looking at what each other does that piles costs or regulations on businesses. Those all add up. Illinois Senate, Youth Tackle Football Ban Dead for Now, by John O'Connor, Associated Press, Springfield. The sponsor of a proposal to ban Illinois children younger than 12 from playing tackle football told the Associated Press on Wednesday that the measure aimed at delaying the efforts of helmet-banging head trauma lacks the votes to pass this session. Representative Carol Senti, a Vernon Hills Democrat, said parents and taxpayers need more time to absorb the evidence of a link between repeated blows to the brain and chronic traumatic encephalopathy, a dementia-like degenerative disease characterized by memory loss, violent urges, depression, and other cognitive troubles. Prominent ex-football players have died by suicide, and others who are living blame their brain-related dysfunctions on CTE. Sente's legislation is named for former Chicago Bears defensive back Dave Duerson, who took his own life at age 50 in 2011, but preserved his brain for research that ultimately revealed the markers of CTE. Sente said she is pleased her push for the law at least fueled a discussion on the proposal. It became clear over the past 10 weeks that parents need more time to absorb the evidence that exists linking repeated subconcussive hits to a youth's brain to CTE, she said. Fans of football, considered America's most popular sport, argue that children can be taught safe tackling techniques, and Sente's proposal would delay key skill development and eliminate opportunities for the disadvantaged. The Little Illini Junior Football League includes 22 teams with more than 1,200 participants from Central and Eastern Illinois, including Decatur, Catholic, Maroa, Warrensburg. Chris Quick of Monticello has been president of Little Illini JFL for more than 10 years and has been a junior league coach for more than 20 years. He said many in the league felt the proposed bill would actually cause more football injuries in the long term. Most of the teams are concerned about it because the younger kids, that's where they are learning how to tackle and how to properly play the game of football, Quick said. If you take that away and put them up in the 7th or 8th grade, and that's their first year, they are so much bigger and faster. We think you're going to have more injuries that way. Quick said he also feared that the ban would cause youth to lose interest in football. If you tell them when they're younger that they can't play, they're going to find other stuff to do, Quick said. Then, when they're able to play at 7th or 8th grade, they may not have the interest in it. Eventually, I think it would have killed the high school programs, because the JFL is the feeder program for the high schools. The legislature isn't scheduled to adjourn until May 31st. Sente, who announced in September 2017 that she would not seek re-election in 2018, could seek an extension to reporting rules and continue working on the roll call. But she said the anger of vitriol of parents and coaches around the state made it clear that lawmakers would struggle to vote yes on her measure, even if they favor it. Opponents believe that the decision about when a child takes to the gridiron should be left to the parents. Some told Sente that CTE is an NFL issue that isn't relevant for the vast majority of football players who lack the talent to play in college or professional ranks. The Chicago-based Pop Warner Youth Football Program criticized the plan. Pop Warner football is safer today than it ever has been in its 90-year history, thanks to mandated coaching education, stringent new rules, a changing culture inside the game, and greater awareness around concussions, spokesman Brian Heffern said last month after Sente's measure won House committee approval. Banning the sport for young people is not the answer to concerns anyone may have about the game. Sente countered that children could develop necessary skills playing flag football or could choose from any number of off-field activities or hobbies. Despite the legislature's adjournment in May, the proposal stays alive until year's end. Lawmakers will gavel into session for 2 weeks late in the year and could consider it then, Sente said. This is cutting-edge research that is evolving weekly, Sente said. As the evidence reaches parents, I believe more individuals will delay when their child starts playing tackle football. If they don't have options like flag football, I believe in time parents and youth will steer away from football entirely. Herald and Review staff writer Matthew Flatten contributed to this story. This week at heraldreview.com/calendar. Today, Home Seller Workshop, 6 p.m., Decatur Public Library Madden Auditorium, free, no pre-registration required. Friday, Phantom of the Opera, 7:30 p.m., Kirkland Fine Arts Center, Millikan University, tickets $20 to $26. Saturday, Decatur Train Fair, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., Decatur Civic Center, $5. Crash Hurts Deputies, Suspect Arrested, by Claire Hettinger, Herald and Review, Decatur. One person has been arrested following a car crash at North Monroe and West Packard Streets Tuesday evening that injured three people, including two Macon County Sheriff's deputies, the Sheriff's Office said. Sally X. Tullison, 28, was being held in the Macon County Jail on $20,000 bond on preliminary charges of driving under the influence of alcohol, aggravated fleeing and eluding, and possession of cannabis, according to a news release from the Sheriff's Office. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the Macon County State's Attorney's Office. The Sheriff's Office was assisting the Decatur Park District Police after a vehicle had fled from a park officer about 8:30 p.m. Tuesday, the news release said. A sheriff's deputy located the vehicle later and attempted a traffic stop, but the suspect vehicle refused and a short pursuit ensued. The sheriff's office said the vehicle failed to yield at a stop sign at Monroe and Packard and collided with a different sheriff's office vehicle that was not involved in the initial pursuit. A passenger in Tullison's vehicle and two deputies were treated and released from Decatur Memorial Hospital, the sheriff's office said. The Decatur Police Department is investigating the crash. This is the second officer-involved crash this week. A Macon County Sheriff's deputy was one of two people seriously injured in a two-vehicle crash at Illinois 48 and East Mound Road late Sunday night. In a statement, Sheriff's Office Sergeant Scott Flannery said the crash happened at 10:31 p.m., as deputies were responding to a possible home invasion call in Oriana. Speaking on Monday evening, Lieutenant Jamie Belcher said the deputy was in stable condition with a few broken bones and that the civilian driver suffered injuries not considered life-threatening in the crash. Coaches deny sex charges. Pre-trial hearing set May 31st for Dylan Nunn and Matthew Krause by Tony Reed, Herald and Review, Decatur. Two Decatur high school coaches accused of sex offenses with teenage girls have entered pleas of not guilty in Macon County Circuit Court. In separate cases, Dylan W. Nunn, 26, who appeared with defense attorney Douglas Johnson, was arraigned Wednesday on two charges of indecent solicitation of a 14-year-old child and two counts of grooming, the act of using electronic communications to seduce or entice a child to commit sex offenses. Matthew E. Krause, also 26, was arraigned Tuesday on one count of the sexual exploitation of a child, now aged 14, and one count of grooming. He is being represented by defense attorney Hugh Rowden. Judge James Coriel assigned both cases to Judge Jeffrey Geisler, with a pretrial hearing scheduled for May 31st for both cases. Krause is free on a $150,000 bond, but Nunn remains in the Macon County Jail with his bond set at $100,000. Johnson told Coryell that a motion had been filed previously to reduce the bond, and Coryell said that was now a matter for Geisler to consider. Sworn police affidavits in each case said both men worked as coaches at Eisenhower High School. Nunn, who was the girls' freshman basketball coach, as well as a school district security guard, is accused of repeatedly making sexual advances to a 14-year-old student. Police said he talked to the girl about having sex and persuaded her to send him a picture of herself in her underwear. Krause, 26, who coached softball and also worked as a teaching assistant at French Academy Elementary School, is accused of using Snapchat to have conversations about sex with a teenage student. Prosecutors also said he sent the child nude pictures of himself. Volunteers help plant trees. Nelson Amphitheater site gets greenery. Other city parks will as well. By Jalen Cook, Herald and Review, Decatur. As progress continues at the site of Nelson Park's $4.25 million amphitheater, the Decatur Park District worked to beautify its surrounding area Wednesday with a little help from the young professionals of Caterpillar. About 12 members of the Fortune 100 company's employee resource group joined Park District grounds workers to plant 27 trees in the medians of the amphitheater's parking lot. According to Josh McGrath, the district's horticulture supervisor, said more trees and shrubbery are planned. He said the trees planted Wednesday are paper bark maples, a non-flowering crabapples, tree lilacs, and Persian ironwoods. It'll take probably 3 years to really be able to see what the trees are going to look like, he said. Decatur Parks Foundation Director Jill Appleby said the district purchased the trees with a $25,000 grant from CN Railroad that it received in June 2017. The district matched the grant, and Appleby said the $50,000 will allow for 240 trees to be planted throughout Decatur's parks. The participation of the young professionals on Wednesday was part of the district's ongoing attempts to collaborate with corporate partners, Appleby said. She said the group, which aims to develop Caterpillar's young employees through community service and other activities, reached out to the district about opportunities to help. We just try to fit whatever niche they're doing, and if it's possible with our staff, we'll make it happen, Appleby said. Alicia Bishop, Caterpillar section manager and community service committee chair for the young professionals, said the group will partner with the park district for the rest of the year. They'll help out with other projects and activities, she said, such as the district summer lunch program and the Big Obstacle 3K fundraiser. These trees are going to be here for many years to come, and we get to put our mark on that, Bishop said. That's pretty cool. Meanwhile, Director of Operations Ryan Raleigh said construction crews are continuing work at the amphitheater's future home near the parking lot. Despite the challenges that bad weather has created for many of the district's projects and activities, he said the crews are moving along as best they can. The amphitheater, which was funded by a grant from the Howard G. Buffett Foundation, has been a major aspect of the district's lakefront development plans since 2014. In recent weeks, contractor Christy Foltz, Inc., has worked to install footings and walls for the venue's seating areas and have made progress on the stage's infrastructure, he said. The underground conduits for electrical and plumbing are in, and they're getting ready to pour the floors of two outpost buildings, Raleigh said. Right now, it's just a lot of the concrete and footing work. Officials previously said the project was slated for completion by July 29th, but on Wednesday, Raleigh said he did not have an exact timeline for construction going forward. Obviously, as we get out of this spring weather and get some more stable weather, contractors can reevaluate where they are, he said. Then, we'll have a much better idea if we'll still push for a fall concert or one in the spring of next year. As for the Overlook Adventure Park Aquatic Center, another major aspect of the lakefront development plans, Raleigh said district staff hope to present work bids for the project to the park board at its next meeting. The bids have been received, he said, but officials are still analyzing the cost and whether there are other ways to save money. Young professionals Fred Tolan, Rachel Lutz, and Rahil Chowdhury said they look forward to when they can return to the Nelson Park's completed amenities and see the fruits of their labor grow to become fixtures. We can come back and be like, I did that, Chowdhury said of the trees. Champaign Nursing Home fine reduced, Associated Press, Springfield. A Central Illinois nursing home has been fined $32,500 for a violation stemming from the death of an elderly woman who wandered outside on a sub-zero night. State health officials originally fined Helia Healthcare of Champaign $50,000 for failing to effectively monitor 89-year-old Annette White, who died on December 30, 2017. The Champaign News-Gazette reports that fine was reduced after Helia didn't contest the violation and fine and waived its right to a hearing. White had severe cognitive impairment from Alzheimer's disease and had a history of wandering that left her at risk. Claire's Restaurant reopens. New health department inspection score was 93. By Claire Hettinger, Herald and Review. Decatur. Claire's Family Restaurant opened Tuesday, following a closure by the Macon County Health Department last week. The problems that led to closure included mouse feces, cockroaches, and ants in multiple areas of the building. Director of Environmental Health at the Macon County Health Department, Kathy Wade, said the restaurant met all of the requirements of the health department and was allowed to reopen. The new inspection score for Claire's was 93. On April 10th, Claire's, located at 2502 East William Street, received a score of 53 out of 100, and its permit was suspended, according to an inspection report obtained by the Herald and Review through a request under the Freedom of Information Act. To reopen, a restaurant must score at least 85 out of 100 on another inspection, according to the health department. Connecting over coffee. Coffee with a Cop brings Millikan students, police together. By Claire Hettinger, Herald and Review, Decatur. Police Chief James Gett said it's good to have his officers out in public when they're not on duty, visiting with residents and building relationships. Residents and Millikan University students met with local law enforcement and shared a cup of coffee Wednesday morning at the Blue Brew Coffee, the Millikan University-run coffee shop inside Hickory Point Bank and Trust, 225 North Water Street. Gett said the Coffee with a Cop event went well. About 20 people joined a handful of Decatur police officers for conversation and coffee, Gett said. The conversations involved the importance of police-community relationships, he said. The coffee shop is neat because it was started by Millikan students, Gett said. He also praised the students for inviting the police to visit. The department scheduled the event to connect with the community and get to know people in a different way, he said. The coffee events take place a few times a year. The last one was in October, when community members asked about public safety, the Las Vegas shooting, and local gun control. One Blue Brew employee, Michaela Krieger, a Millikan sophomore, said the company wanted to host the event to build better relationships with the police, which she admitted aren't always the best. Millikan faculty and students attended, she said, and it gave the coffee shop a way to reach more people. The shop was really full this morning, and it was a really great opportunity for people to collaborate and be together, she said. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review for Thursday, April 19th, 2018. Please stay tuned.